The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Sunday, so it's time for the Limeys for a show entitled "You Can't Argue with Someone Who's Made Up Their Mind." So let's get going. Let's time stamp the show. It is 10:02 a.m. here in the UK this Sunday, November the 17th, 2024. Today's show title, "You Can't Argue with Someone Who's Made Up Their Mind," is something Marlon Brando said in the excellent documentary "Listen to Me, Marlon," in regard to his experiences with the director on the set of 1962's Mutiny on the Bounty, which Brando said was his worst experience in motion pictures as an actor. And the show image is of the 2015 movie poster of the "Listen to Me, Marlon" documentary. Okay, so next, some strange bedfellows for you. The CD reissue of John Cale's 1972 album "The Academy in Peril," a Shull foot grinder, and a Morphy Richards kettle, which comprised my Amazon order that arrived on Friday. When I was 21, I would have opened the John Cale album first, but now that I'm 51, my first point of call was the Shull foot grinder, and I will spare you the details. Next, I just want to draw your attention to today's traditional Christian message entitled "The Parables of Jesus for the Dragnet," which is a four-minute message that is now available on achshow.com. Now, it's actually about 4 minutes, I think, and 20 or 30 seconds. I can hopefully quickly have a look here. If it's 4:23, okay. It's probably the shortest show I've ever done. Let's have a look at the length of the music. 1:22 intro, 1:13 outro, so that's 2:35 in music. So it's literally about 2 minutes of content, and that content includes the Lord's Prayer that I start off every traditional Christian message of late, so that anyone who's listening who wants someone to pray with has got that opportunity. And then I read the parable. And I'm doing one parable at a time. Some of them are obviously longer than others. There are some that go on for a few pages because I read everywhere that they're documented. So, of course, the parables are in the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. Sometimes a parable is written in each of those books because they're basically these individual apostles' experiences with Jesus Christ. So I will read all the accounts if there are more than one. And sometimes, like today's, there is just one account. It's about four or five verses, so it's very, very quick. But Jesus Christ didn't say, well, this is a quick parable, so I'm going to give you five at once for you to think about. I think what's good about this message, what I enjoy, is it really makes you concentrate more on the parable itself, and you take things away from it and have ideas that you can apply to today. And funnily enough, the one today is one of the few that I had actually heard of, so do please check that out. And I'm sure many of you, like myself, on shows that you know very well. You might fast forward through the opening music anyway just to get to the content and save time. The only time I ever do a show intro segment is on the Limey's show. I don't do it on any other shows, so if you want to skip the music, then feel free, obviously, to do so. It's your show. You've downloaded it. You do with it as you wish. But please do not add to or take from content. And also, when I close out the show, I close out the show. I never add a little bit onto the music at the end. So once that's playing, obviously, you're not going to miss anything if you close it out. Even though I think both the opening music and the closing music are excellent, both by Pokerface, and many of you over the years have said so too. I remember Dr. Lorraine Day said to me that when the show starts, she loves the music. It really makes her get into it, and it made me chuckle, really, Dr. Lorraine Day getting in with the opening music, Area 51 by Pokerface, and I thought it was quite charming. Okay, so let's move on to, whilst in the UK, more and more people are frightened of expressing their opinions in real life or online in case they end up in jail. Let's look at some of the people who avoided jail recently, presumably because they presented a lesser risk to the public than those expressing opinions than that the authorities do not like. And I'm probably going to have to redo this intro, because what I've started doing is also people that have been released, different things like that. So anything that you sort of think, well, you know, this person did X, Y, and Z, and they've been released after so many years, yet someone else who protested immigration because they'd been given fake news that an asylum seeker had killed three girls — it wasn't an asylum seeker, but it wasn't an indigenous Brit either — you know, they're sort of getting a similar sentence or more. And it's just really to sort of show what an absolute farce the judicial system is. It was always a case of that you break the law, it doesn't matter. The slippery slope started when they started saying, well, you know, if you assault someone, rather than just being straight assault, you hit someone. Oh, well, if you did it for this reason, then we increase your sentence and stuff like that. It's like, well, no, the offence is the same. Regardless of, you know, if you did it because you didn't like the look of somebody, but if you did it because you didn't like the look of somebody for a specific reason, I think you know where I'm going, they get more, even though it's the same sort of thing. It's or someone annoyed you. It's just pathetic. And now we see exactly why all these caveats were bolted on, because this is where they knew they had to go to prevent any sort of nationalistic sentiment rising up in the Western world countries that they were seeking to essentially overthrow. So I'll have a look at that. But here's the stories in this section that are kind of all things, as I say, prison, jail sentence, avoids jail, all that sort of stuff related. First up, the Canary. The first of numerous Insulate Britain activists on trial have just been spared jail. And these are the sort of idiots that block roads in a laughable attempt to endear the public to their beliefs. Next, Daily Record. Hamilton man who threw ammonia in cousin's face narrowly avoids jail term. Next, Manchester Evening News. Man 20, who left taxi driver with life-changing injuries after going at 70 miles per hour in a 30 mile per hour zone, spared jail. Yeah, I'm sure the taxi driver would agree. People who protest illegal immigration are obviously far more deserving of a prison sentence. Next, Daily Mail. Delivery driver 43, who stole £28,000 worth of cereal in a tractor during his first week on the job, avoids prison. Now, I tried cereal recently, and that's what really put my weight up. So I know I have plenty of sugar on it, but I think there's something in the cereal themselves. What did I have? Lucky Charms, Cocoa Pops, and Crunchy Nut Corn Flakes. Won't be going near them again. I've had my little, I'll say now, I tried also breakfast muffins with butter, saurine fruit loaf with butter. The only thing I didn't try was toast, because it gets stone cold you know, within like a minute of you toasting it. And I eat quite slowly these days, so I like to eat something that's hot. But again, this bread puts on a hell of a lot of weight. So what prompted this is I was starting to eat crisps or potato chips for breakfast, because what I've been doing for years is I would have a few little biscuits for breakfast, and these were either these little Cheddar's biscuits that you could get that I first had when I was a child, always liked them. And also these Tuck biscuits, and you can get them in a variety. You can get them in a cheese for sandwich version with this sort of cheese flavour cream in the middle. But generally, I just have the normal plain biscuits. Some of them you can get flavours on and things like that. And just four or five of each of them each morning, 8 to 10 total, something like that. And so I was doing that most days. And then on a weekend, I'd, as a little treat, give myself Saturday and Sunday, I'd have crisps for breakfast. And then I suddenly thought, well, why don't I just have that every day? And then I don't know, I wasn't feeling, I didn't have the energy and stuff. So what I'm actually doing is I'm going to go back to biscuits and crisps a couple of times a week as a treat, because I've been doing that for years. I spoke to Misha Popov about biscuits. They keep for a lot longer than they say. If you do eat them past the date, I wouldn't advise it, but I have been told that, you know, they might be a bit soft or something like that, but they're not going to harm you like if you had, say, dairy products that were out of date, something like that. So anyway, that's where I am. A little update. I covered breakfast a few weeks ago on a topic section, and I'm going to go back to something that was tried and tested for years and worked for me. But it's nice to have tried those other things again. I don't regret it. It just kind of reinforces my belief, well, you haven't really been missing much over the years. And it probably explains why a few years ago I did get up to about 14 stone, because back then I was eating cereals, and that was when I had the first instance of the ants coming into my flat that I believe were planted there. And they were all around the cereal box, which is why I stopped eating cereals back then. And suddenly I lost over a period of time, I don't remember how long, but I must have lost over 2 stone in weight. And that's the only thing I can directly tie that too. Okay, so let's get back to our people who avoided prison segment. Next, we've got the Daily Record. Scots dentist from top private clinic spared jail after campaign of terror against wife. He's also a Celtic fan, folks, and you'll hear more on that later. Next, Wigan Today. Shamed Wigan Borough man with child abuse film library avoids jail. Wow. I wonder what would have happened if he had an Adolf Hitler film library. Next, The Leader. Mum spared jail after smuggling drugs into HMP Berwyn. And apparently she slipped £10,000 worth of drugs into an inmate's trousers as she kissed him, which I guess is more pleasant than a couple of ferrets, folks. Next, My London. Paedophile caught in North London after sending porn to young girls spared prison. Next, Daily Mail. Terrorist who plotted fertilizer bomb attacks on high profile targets like Bluewater shopping centre are freed from prison. Yeah, gotta free those prisons up for the hate speech terrorists. Next, Daily Record. Cruel Scots foster carer who violently attacked and humiliated children avoids jail. Next, Belfast Telegraph. Former Belfast solicitor spared jail after admitting defrauding estates of 3 dead clients. So, you know, it's called probate, folks. Someone dies, you go to a solicitor to pay the necessary taxes and what have you, and they're going to try and defraud you too. It's amazing. And it reminds me as well, something that Bob Jones, Pastor Bob Jones, used to say. I like a lot of his sound bites. They were a lot of ways they made you think, but a lot of them, they were funny as well at the same time. One of them was, if you put a lawyer in a town, he'll starve to death, but if you put 2 there, they'll both get rich. Next, Daily Mail. Trainee teacher, 26, who shared more than 1,000 videos of child abuse and newborn babies being raped, avoids jail. Yes, you have to be tolerant of these maps That's the trendy acronym for minor attracted persons, which of course is a sanitized term for paedophiles, folks. And judging from the direction in which this country is headed, I imagine I will not be allowed to be critical of them in the not too distant future. Next, Somerset County Gazette. Man avoids jail time after threatening to kill parent with a wrench. Next, Glasgow World. Former Celtic star avoids jail after drug possession, drink driving and high-speed car chase. And finally, Daily Mail. Scorned female barrister, 37, who was jailed for life after her fatal attraction plot to frame her ex-lover with false rape, kidnap and stabbing claims, is released after less than 4 years behind bars. Well, okay, I'm just going to have a little drink of water now. And as you know, the show title, well, let's just read this section. The trouble is when I script something, if I think about adding something now, then I might find I've already scripted it later when I go to read it. Because I do read through a few times, but some things lock into the brain, and unfortunately with me, a lot of things don't. But we're going to go through the films of Marlon Brando. Now, I always go to Wikipedia for films and television, but I found a far better chronological list of Brando's films. And anyone who's read either of my books knows how much I love chronologies. A far better chronological list of Brando's films with a one-line description from IMDb. The link to the list I will include in the post for this show at achshow.com, and which I'm going to read to you now. So let me just line this up, and I believe that there are 39 films that he's listed, because there was a 40th, but that was when he played George Lincoln Rockwell in the television series Roots. No, 38 titles it says here. The reason I mention that is that if you're not interested in this section, I'm going to read from 1 to 38, then just fast forward. I don't know how long it's going to take, but hopefully we could blitz through it fairly quickly. Number 1, The Men, 1950. A paralysed war vet tries to adjust to the world without the use of his limbs. 2, A Streetcar Named Desire, 1951. Disturbed Blanche DuBois moves in with her sister in New Orleans and is tormented by her brutish brother-in-law while her reality crumbles around her. 3, Viva Zapata, 1952. The story of Mexican revolutionary Emiliano Zapata, who led a rebellion against the corrupt, oppressive dictatorship of President Porfirio Diaz in the early 20th century. 4, Julius Caesar, 1953. The growing ambition of Julius Caesar is a source of major concern to his close friend Brutus. Cassius persuades him to participate in his plot to assassinate Caesar, but they have both sorely underestimated Mark Antony. 5, The Wild One, 1953. Two rival motorcycle gangs terrorise a small town after one of their leaders is thrown in jail. 6, On the Waterfront, 1954. An ex-prize fighter turned New Jersey longshoreman struggles to stand up to his corrupt union bosses, including his older brother, as he starts to connect with the grieving sister of one of the syndicate's victims. 7, 1954, Desiree. The rise and fall of Napoleon Bonaparte, Emperor of France. 8, Guys and Dolls, 1955. In New York, a gambler is challenged to take a cold female missionary to Havana, but they fall for each other and the bet has a hidden motive to finance a crap game. 9, The Tea House of August Moon, 1956. In post-World War II Japan, an American captain is brought in to help build a school, but the locals want a tea house instead. 10, Sayonara, 1957. A US Air Force major in Kobe confronts his own opposition to marriages between American servicemen and Japanese women when he falls for a beautiful performer. 11, the Young Lions, get the Y and the L right way round, The Young Lions, 1958. The lives of three young men, a German and two Americans, during World War II. 12, The Fugitive Kind. 1960, Valentine Snakeskin Xavier, a trouble-prone drifter trying to go straight, wanders into a small Mississippi town looking for a simple and honest life, but finds himself embroiled with problem-filled women. 13, One-Eyed Jacks, 1961. After they rob a bank in Mexico, Dad Longworth absconds with the loot, leaving his partner Rio to be captured by the Rurales. 5 years later, Rio escapes from prison and seeks revenge on Longworth, but falls in love with his stepdaughter. Sounds like Elon Musk's father, doesn't it? 14, Mutiny on the Bounty, 1962. In 1787, British ship Bounty leaves Portsmouth to bring a cargo of breadfruit from Tahiti, but the savage onboard conditions imposed by Captain Bligh trigger a mutiny led by First Officer Fletcher Christian. Number 15, The Ugly American, 1963. An ambitious American scholar becomes the ambassador to Sarkhan, a Southeast Asian country where civil war is brewing. 16, Bedtime Story. 1964. Two scam artists preying on women for their money clash in Mediterranean hotspot. Will the cultured high-class con artist come out on top? Or will the rough small change scammer rise to win the wager? David Niven and Marlon Brando. This sounds very much like the film Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with Steve Martin and Michael Caine. I'm just wondering if it was that was a remake of this. Number 17, 1965. Number 17 is Morituri. 1965, a war pacifist is blackmailed to pose as an SS officer and to disable the scuttling explosives on a freighter carrying rubber cargo to be captured by the Allies. 18, The Chase. 1966, the citizens of a small Texas town become worried and panicked when a local bad boy escapes prison and heads for his hometown. 19, The Appaloosa, 1966, man tries to recover a horse stolen from him by a Mexican bandit. Pretty succinct, that description. I wish they all were. 20, A Countess from Hong Kong, 1967, in Hong Kong, an ambassador returning to America meets a Russian countess, a refugee without a passport, who decides to hide in his cabin. 21, Reflections in a Golden Eye, 1967. Bizarre tale of sex, betrayal and perversion at a military post. Sounds like Guantanamo Bay, doesn't it? But that would be before its time. 22, Candy, 1968. Candy Christian, an innocent high schooler, encounters numerous colourful characters and humorous sexual situations while attempting to find meaning in life. 23, The Night of the Following Day, 1969, two men kidnap a girl off the streets, take her to a beach house owned by a drug-addicted stewardess and hold her for ransom. 24, Burn, 1969, in 1844, a British mercenary helps the revolting slaves of an Antilles Island colony gain independence from Portugal, but later returns to hunt down a local rebel leader and former protege. 25, The Nightcomers, 1971, prequel to Henry James, The Turn of the Screw, focusing on groundskeeper Peter Quint's slow corruption of the virtuous governess Miss Jessel and the children she looks after. And this was one of our strange bedfellows last week, in which, I think I mentioned it anyway, in whatever context, but to actually witness a woman best known for appearing in the BBC sitcom Last of the Summer Wine threatening Marlon Brando, best known as the Godfather, with a gun and then pulling his hair in this 1971 is a treat I never imagined I would witness in my lifetime. So there you go. Let's move on to number 26. This is one you all know. The Godfather, 1972. The aging patriarch of an organised crime dynasty transfers control of his clandestine empire to his reluctant son. And underneath it says Academy Award for Best Actor, but it didn't have that underneath the On the Waterfront, which he also won an Academy Award for Best Actor in, 54? I think the film was, so the ceremony was probably 55. 27, Last Tango in Paris, 1972. A young Parisian woman meets a middle-aged American businessman who demands their clandestine relationship be based only on sex. 28, The Missouri Breaks, 1976. Tom Logan is a horse thief. Rancher David Braxton has horses and a daughter worth stealing. But Braxton has just hired Lee Clayton, an infamous regulator, to hunt down the horse thieves one at a time. 29, Superman, 1978. An alien orphan is sent from his dying planet to Earth, where he grows up to become his adoptive home's first and greatest superhero. 30, Apocalypse Now, 1979. An U.S. Army officer serving in Vietnam is tasked with assassinating a renegade Special Forces colonel who sees himself as a god. 31, The Formula, 1980. The synthetic fuel production formula invented by the Nazis at the end of World War II is sought after by some who aim to sell it and by others who wish to destroy it. 32, A Dry White Season, 1989. 9-year gap there. A white middle-class South African suburbanite with no interest in politics agrees to help his black gardener find his jailed son. His investigation opens his eyes to the horrors committed by the secret police and turns him into a target. 33, The Freshman, 1990. A New York City film school student accepts a job with a local mobster who resembles a famous cinema godfather and who takes the young man under his wing after demanding total loyalty. 34, Christopher Columbus, The Discovery. Genoese navigator overcomes intrigue in the court of King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella of Spain and gains financing for his expedition to the East Indies. 35, Don Juan DeMarco, 1994. A psychiatrist must cure a young patient who presents himself as Don Juan, the world's greatest lover. 36, The Brave, 1997. A down-on-his-luck American Indian, recently released from jail, is offered the chance to star as the victim of a snuff film, the resulting pay of which could greatly help his poverty-stricken family. 37, Free Money, 1998. A prison warden with a nasty habit of killing escapees, has teen twin daughters claiming to be pregnant. Their boyfriends marry them. The husband's only way out of hell is to rob the money train. And finally, 38, The Score, 2001. An aging thief hopes to retire and live off his ill-gotten wealth with his lover when a young kid convinces him into doing one last heist that comes with a large payout. Okay, that was exhausting. Just have a little sip of water. Now, most of these films I did not watch, as their subject matter did not appeal to me. And of those I did watch, I can only recommend The Godfather, Apocalypse Now, and The Freshman, which for me was Brando's last film worth watching. The only other decent one that I saw since then was his final film, 2003's The Score, with Robert De Niro and Edward Norton, who for me was the outstanding actor in the film. Whilst it was interesting to see the two actors who portrayed Vito Corleone, Marlon Brando and Robert De Niro, acting together for the first time, in my opinion, Brando was only in the film due to his reputation, and on that basis, if his limited role would have been played by Barry from EastEnders, no one would have known the difference. The other film I'll throw in there is The Nightcomers that I mentioned, with Thora Hird from Last of the Summer Wine getting the upper hand with Marlon Brando. I don't think much of the film, but it was interesting to see those bits. Maybe you could look up those bits online, see if there are clips online. It is going to be difficult to get. I managed to get a second-hand copy for, I think, $8.50. But if you go onto Amazon, it's all second-hand now, because the company that put all this excellent old television and what have you onto DVD and in some cases Blu-ray company called Network in the UK, they went bust not so long ago. So all these great sets like the Sweeney and different things like that are not going to be produced anymore. You might still find some new ones on Amazon that are old stock. But if you have anything that was put out by Network that you're after, I would get it while you can, because the price is only going to go up. So on Amazon, this thing that cost me $8.50, you will see The Night Comers on Blu-ray. It starts off at about £20 now. So anyway. Finally, my favourite Marlon Brando film, which is not in his filmography, is today's show image, 2015's Listen to Me Marlon, which holds an approval rating of 96% based on 102 reviews from the review aggregator website Rotten Tomatoes, You Say Tomato, I Say Tomato, and the critical response section of its Wikipedia page reads as follows. The Village Voice called it a masterpiece, and David Edelstein lists it as the greatest, most searching documentary of an actor ever put on film. According to Vanity Fair, it is a compelling documentary about Marlon Brando, compiled entirely from private audio tapes the actor recorded at home, in business meetings, during hypnosis, in therapy, and during press interviews. As I mentioned earlier, I got today's show title. You can't argue with someone who's made up their mind from the Listen to Me Marlon documentary, which I have only watched once but have listened to many times after I extracted the audio from the film. Well, I can update that now because I was watching this up until 3 minutes before we went on the air. And it should have really been four, shouldn't it? Because I was nearly a minute late. So sorry about that. But basically, what's also good about it, because of course I watched it once, and then it's one of those things you can just listen to, and it's not, it's information after information, so you don't need the imagery. But the good thing about it is a lot of the films I've read through from that filmography, they'll have little clips of them going through, and it's done chronologically, as I say, as the film is as well. So I've just finished the bit on The Godfather and got up to the part where his son was kidnapped in real life, and they originally felt that there was mafia involvement due to his film The Godfather. It turned out to be his ex-wife had done it for some strange reason. But anyway, even though those films that I read the descriptions to you of didn't really appeal, and those that did, I'm not going to go through. I mentioned the ones I would recommend, and if there's any I haven't seen, I'm, you know, just take my word for it. I've mentioned what I consider worth watching, and you may have other feelings, and you must follow your own beliefs. But the only one in there that I might have liked to look at was the first one, 1950s The Men, his first film, where he plays a paraplegic. From the documentary, he lived in a serviceman hospital for ex-servicemen who were sadly rendered with that condition after combat, lived there for 3 weeks, and that was how he got to know how these people moved and the different things that they could do, and, you know, all these information he, you know, absorbed for his role. But again, there's a clip of that, and it's, I don't know, it's, I know people will say that I'm, what is it, a Philistine or something like that, because I really, the only black and white films that I watch are like Laurel and Hardy, and I've got the colourised versions of those on the disc, but I won't watch them. Has to be black and white, that's what I grew up with. But when I see anything else in black and white, it reminds me of those stupid cliffhanger type things that you would see on BBC Two as well when you were younger, like Laurel and Hardy, and, you know, you'd see the end of one and this car goes over the cliff and it explodes at the bottom, and then the start of the next one, which is following it on, the car stops before it goes over the cliff and explodes. It's just so ridiculous, and I'm sorry, but I kind of lump all those sort of things in there. They remind me of that, unless it's Laurel and Hardy. And even to the extent, you know, I own a copy of Raging Bull with obviously Scorsese film with De Niro, Joe Pesci and that, but I've when I compare to the amount of times I've watched even The Irishman, that's nearly 40 years younger than Raging Bull. I probably watch that more often than I've watched Raging Bull. For some reason, the black and white thing kind of puts me off. Okay, so something else that puts me off, as I'm sure it does you, is our weekly look at the BBC Verify website. But it's something I think that we really should be doing, because we need to watch what these miscreants are up to in their attempts to brainwash us in a variety of different manners. So let me go over to bbc.co.uk/news/reality_check. These people, I mean, whoever came up with that idea, either they were chuckling at how much they were having us on, or they're so full of it they actually believe this is what they're doing. But what would last Sunday have been? It would have been about the 10th, wouldn't it? Because it's the 17th today, so we need to scroll down to anything after the... Well, that's easy. There was one on the 9th, and then the next one was on the 13th. So I'm going to go chronological order. These are the stories on the BBC Verify website since we did last week's show. 13th of November, will Elon Musk be able to cut $2 trillion from US government spending? 14th of November, why is Kamala Harris still asking for campaign donations? 15th of November, fact-checking RFK Jr.'s views on health policy. Okay, so only three in the last week, and I'll be including a link to the BBC Verify page in the post for this show, which you can find at achshow.com. And now let me share with you the delights of being me in the last week. Now, as you know, I'm sorting out my mum's house. I tend to stay over there one night every week, busy doing things while I'm there. I think I've just done the lawn for the last time a week or so ago. So good to get that out of the way until hopefully the March-April time. One thing I was reluctant to do was to sort out her clothes, because she's got two big wardrobes in the bedroom, and that's where I sleep now, but there's another wardrobe in a room off the bedroom which leads to the ensuite bathroom, and that's where I've been keeping my clothes, because all her clothes are in there. But after she needed new clothes at the home, I thought, well, she used to buy things, and I know she was obviously very thin when she went in, and she used to say buy a trousers and a skirt. She'd buy them in a 12 and a 14, because, I mean, she bought cheap clothes, folks. There were some skirts I found that were from Asda, and that was owned by Walmart, funnily enough, for a while, and it was sold to someone else in the UK. And it still had a label of £5 on it. You know, so she probably bought it 20 years ago, but even then, that's cheap. You know, she wasn't somebody who spent lots of money, and that's kind of what I've been dealing with in the home, a huge volume of property with virtually zero value, only really to, you know, anyone that might put it up in a charity shop. And as I've said, charity shops have turned a lot of the stuff away. But there was something about her clothes. I think it's probably because she can still use them. Whereas I can say to her, you know, I've got this rate, you know, she's not allowed to say wear a watch anymore. They're not allowed jewellery in the home and stuff like that. Again, she didn't have a particularly special one of those, but that's what I'm sort of getting at. But clothes, she can. And so I started going through and I realised she's only worn trousers for the last, well, I don't know, 15, 20 years, something like that. Yeah, that's what I remember. And so any skirts, any dresses, stuff like that. I mean, on a cruise, like when we would go to dinner, she would wear like a dress. That's the only time I'd see her in those years. And that was only if you had to have a particular evening where it was black tie. She'd wear a special dress. Otherwise, she'd be happy going in on wearing what she normally did. Excuse me. So I was able to start getting rid of these things. And one of them... is she's got this multicoloured type of, with all this flowery sort of different colours on. It's a favourite top that she wears, and they put that on her a lot. It's only a shirt, so they generally put it over something else to keep her warm. I found a skirt that matches that, and I also found her wedding outfit when she married my stepfather in 1984. I've kept the skirt for that, and I've kept the wedding outfit. It was just a sort of red skirt and matching top. The reason I've kept that, and I don't want to be morbid, folks, but when my stepfather died, she had that adjusted because she had become thinner as she got older and wore it to his funeral. She wanted to wear the dress that she got married to him in at his funeral. That is what she did. So that is something, either that or the skirt and with the top that she likes wearing now are going to be what I will have her cremated in. So I wanted to keep those here. And then the other things I went through is any tops that I think might fit her, any trousers, stuff like that. So I took all that stuff to the home. So it was like I got rid of stuff that she would not wear again, like skirts and anything that's too small for her now. And it wasn't too difficult, but there was so much to take away to the charity shop. I'm talking like over 20 bin bags full of stuff. And then I had some coats that I was keeping there as well that for whatever reason I'd gone off wearing here. And I'm convinced that, I looked this up online, but they say it's not the case. I am convinced that your arms get longer as you get older, because at least two of them, I put my arms in, and you know when you bend your arms, they go right up, and so they're just too short on the arm, and I'm like, they weren't like that when I bought them. So unless they've shrunk without being washed or anything like that, I can't really explain it. And one of them was leather, so I don't know how leather shrinks, but anyway. And then the other couple were, there was one I bought back here that I used to like, and for some reason I'm struggling with the zip. I wasn't originally that I got it on. I was out with Amanda. I wore it yesterday to show her. And she said, I'll try and zip it up then. And I was struggling with it. And in the end, I zipped it up. I don't know, because it's not been used for so many years and been kept there. But that was sorting out her clothes. And like when I sorted out other things of hers, like I ended up sorting out my things to keep and getting rid of loads of old cards and letters and stuff that I've never really looked at since. And I have no interest to look at now. So getting rid of her stuff has inspired me to get rid of more of my stuff, which is kind of good, really. It's no point having things hanging around that you're not going to use. So anyway, let's move on to our regular bit, in which I tell you that as of December the 1st, 2022, we have a total of 2,362 people having died after taking the fake vaccine and 474,018 people having been injured after taking the fake vaccine. These figures were published on the British government's website page entitled Coronavirus COVID-19 Vaccine and First Reactions, and were aggregated from the totals of the five vaccine analysis prints linked to on that page. I say were because the British government are no longer publishing these, as whilst their website page still exists, the five vaccine analysis prints have now been deleted from it, so I have absolutely no idea of the official figures today. Okay, so now it's time for this week's Viruses and Vaccines, in which I give you a rundown of all the health-related stories I've encountered in the past week. Here we go, folks. First up, Daily Mail. I found a lump just after my baby was born. Now doctors say I have months to live. Next, Daily Mail. Cancer survivor claims she was dismissed for years because doctors said she was too young to get the disease. Yes, that generally used to be the case. Next, Daily Mail. Woman, 21. Diagnosed with deadly cancer that's rising in youngsters, wonder why, reveals a little-known symptom she ignored for 2 years. And finally, Daily Mail, autism may be caused by toxins breathed in by millions every day, as scientists reveal states most at risk. And it's articles such as this which show what a low opinion the powers that should not be have for the intelligence of the people. But sadly, their opinion may be correct. Next, as of yesterday, the Google search results for the term Alex Jones regains control of InfoWars still only returns the articles from many mainstream media organisations about the so-called satirical publication The Onion purchasing InfoWars, and not the update in which Alex regained control of InfoWars due to a judge's ruling issued over questions regarding the legality of the auction process. It will be interesting to see how this plays out, and even more interesting to see how the mainstream media reports on it, especially if it goes in Alex Jones's favour. I, for one, hear crickets. But let's do this now. So this is the search. It's 10:44 a.m. UK time this Sunday, November the 11th. November the 17th, rather, 2024. I've just pasted the search term Alex Jones regains control of InfoWars into google.com. I'm hitting the enter button. The top result is The Onion wins auction to take control of Alex Jones's InfoWars. That's Washington Post. Well, that's not true, because he's now got control of it. And you can find that out for yourself by just going to InfoWars.com. And when he went to it on the day of the hearing, it was this site is currently unavailable. Now it's all up with all his content. And then what other mainstream medias have we got? NBC News: The Onion wins Alex Jones InfoWars in bankruptcy auction. Then we've got CBS News: The Onion buys Alex Jones's InfoWars at bankruptcy auction. Have we got anything else here? It just goes in. These are all major news sites in America, obviously. And none of them are giving you the update that he's actually got it back, pending this other court date. I think it might be coming up Monday or something like that. But he actually, if you look at the Ron Gibson BitChute channel, that's no good to me at the moment because my clip grabbed on August not working. So I can't download or extract the audio from any BitChute, Odyssey, Rumble, YouTube at the moment. He showed him going back into the InfoWars studio with a sink like that idiot Elon Musk did as well. So, yeah, it's an interesting story, but let's be honest, we all have our little gripes about Alex Jones, don't we? Okay, so now it's time for... Well, I'm going to have a drink of water here because this is quite a long bit. And I'd rather be able to go through it for you. Excuse me, without having to do it during the section. This week's Daily Mail articles that didn't end up behind their Mail Plus paywall, which, as the Daily Mail is the most visited news website in the world, gives us an insight into what they, whoever they are, want us to be thinking and talking about. First up, revealed Starmer called for an export ban on police gear to Trump during the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020. Next, Jeremy Clarkson accuses Labour of ethnically cleansing the countryside and wanting to build new immigrant towns over farmland. Wow, I doubt if statements like that are going to resurrect his BBC career anytime soon. Next, hundreds of Eastern European murderers, rapists and paedophiles have exploited weakness in visa system to get into UK police figures show. Oh, thanks for the warning, mainstream media. It's a pity you never gave us a similar heads up on the grooming gangs. I wonder why. Next, Trump pledged to reveal the truth about JFK, UFOs and Jeffrey Epstein. Which secret will he expose first? Yeah, good luck with that. In fact, as I recall, Trump was going to open the JFK and the UFO files in his first term, wasn't he? Next, fascinating pictures of Iran in the 1970s show how sex and fashion thrived before the Islamic Revolution, amid mounting outrage over arrest of woman who stripped in hijab protest. Next, Labour MPs refuse to hold in-person surgeries after receiving abuse over policies affecting farmers and pensioners. So in other words, members of Parliament have no accountability to their constituents because of their feels. Next, Valencia protesters clash with police as 130,000 take to the streets to call for officials to lose their jobs over deadly floods, branding them murderers after alerts were delayed. And after I covered the dams being destroyed on last week's show, these floods are looking less and less like a natural disaster. Next, shocking moment, man goose steps and performs Nazi salute in front of pro-Israel demonstration before police let him walk away. Next, pressure grows on Justin Welby to resign as Archbishop of Canterbury for ignoring sex abuse by the Church of England's most prolific abuser, who targeted more than 100 children and young men. And incidentally, he has since resigned. Next, football shame as Remembrance Sunday silence is scrapped after 9 seconds when Celtic football fans chant pro-IRA songs through it. Imagine my shock. Next, cruise company announces 4-year skip-forward cruise for Americans looking to escape Trump presidency. And being as this is the same cruise that spent 4 months stuck in Belfast, you may want to check the itinerary before you make your booking. Next, misogynist trolls tell Gen Z women, your body, my choice, after they share fears over erosion of their reproductive rights. Next, Esther Ransom, backed assisted suicide law, would only allow terminally ill to end their lives with disabled and mentally ill people barred, and 14 years in jail for those who pressure people into dying. So, on that basis, will Esther Ransom be going to prison for 14 years then? Next, anger at one of the longest roadwork diversions in history. This A road has a 96-mile detour. And get this from the article. The number of roadworks across the UK increased by a whopping 42% between 2019 and 2023. Now I'm going to have a little moan. When I went to my mum's on Wednesday morning, I encountered 3 sets of so-called roadworks, but they were just temporary traffic lights with no work actually being done, and a road closure forcing me to do a massive detour. And I also heard Eric von Essex on the Paul English show on Thursday, after my experience, this was on Wednesday, talking about he has had similar problems on the roads recently, held up for 3/4 of an hour, and just temporary lights and nothing going on. And we know they don't want us driving, folks. You know, is this a bit like what I mentioned about getting a payment done in the bank that takes 10 minutes that I could do less than a minute online? But, you know, it was my mother's account. I was, you know, wanted it all set up properly, and I'm, you know, so I did it through them. Is the bank there telling me, well, we want you all doing this online, so we're going to, you know, make your experience in the branch so tedious when you've got the queuing on top of that, that you're just going to go online yourselves? Is that what they're doing with the roads here? You know, we want people to stop driving, so we're just going to just put temporary traffic lights and not bother doing any work. Just do it to disrupt people's journeys, to put them off using their cars. In the same way we're, you know, got this ULEZ scheme charging people £12-15 a day to drive on roads where they live, if you're in some areas of London. That's what I think's going on. These people in control are the most deceitful, lying, disgusting people, some of them, that we've ever had on the face of this planet. And they are evil. Jesus Christ predicted them. He called them the synagogue of Satan. And they will stop at nothing to get what they want. And they will use a variety of methods in which to accomplish that. And in my opinion, this is a couple of them that I just mentioned. Excuse me. Next, the cyclists who have tracked down their own stolen bikes because of lack of police... I'll repeat that. The cyclists who have tracked down their own stolen bikes because lack of police action... I was right, actually. It should be because of lack of police action, but... so they've tracked them down themselves. There's a map there that reveals worst-hit areas for thefts. But get this next. Child 9 and schoolgirls among youngsters being probed by police over hate incidents, like telling a pupil they smelt like fish. That's a hate incident. And that must be why the police are too busy to investigate stolen bikes. Glad I checked. Next, Big Brother is hit with more than 700 Ofcom complaints after contestants sparked fury with racial joke. Next, Robbie Keane's wife says her family don't feel safe living in Ireland anymore after being sent threatening and dangerous messages from pro-Palestinian activists over his decision to manage Israeli football team. Next, stable hand who claims her arm was crippled in fall from dangerous horse is accused of lying after she was pictured playing rugby. She was trying to claim £100,000 from her boss. Now, I could get onto my soapbox again, and I'm on radiosoapbox.com, so it would be most appropriate. But you see all these sorts of things going on. I remember hearing about it in the early 80s. It was a primarily an American thing. You know, someone slips on the floor in McDonald's and sues them for millions of dollars, something like that. But for me, all these people that go out doing this stuff, oh, we could get money here, could get money there, all this sort of stuff, what it shows is what happens to a society with no moral, aka Christian compass. Because even if you get away with something, in the past it was, well, you know, am I going to suffer in the next life? Have I committed a sin? Is this going to come back to me? People don't have that anymore because it's been taken away from you. And so now their attitude is just to get as much as they can in whatever way that they can. And if that means having to tell lies, well, that doesn't matter to them. You know, lies mean nothing today. I mean, we have people that would rather be called a murderer and a rape or a rapist than a racist. So it's all these sort of things. They don't matter to people so much anymore. People's morals have shifted. And I think it's no coincidence that this has all happened after the separation of church and state. Next, fury over COP29 private jet hypocrisy. How private plane arrivals have soared in Baku during climate summit as world leaders jet in to preach about global warming. Next, horrifying new Charles Manson bombshell revealed in newly unearthed prison call. Basically, he claimed to have killed a couple of people in Mexico, folks. Next, Keir Starmer's new national security advisor faces demands to disown his wife after she promotes Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad's claim that Israel is an outlaw colonial entity. And one can only wonder who would make such demands. Next, the weddings that were cancelled to make room for migrants in hotel that has enraged local residents and was at the centre of private healthcare row. Now, I looked into this article and there are people that they've booked their wedding, it's taking place next year sometime, the invites have gone out, all different things have been ordered to go around that wedding, and this hotel have said, well, actually, we're cancelling you all because we want to put these migrants in instead because we make more money. There you go. Again, a hotel that made a commitment to someone who've gone and sorted out all this other associated stuff. So the hotel going to pay for all their costs for having all the invitations redone, stuff like that? I very much doubt it. And again, it's all about morality. In the past, you would generally have a hotel, well, I can't do that because people are booked up. Well, yeah, I can. What do I have to do legally? Well, all right, well, will I make more money doing it that way? But you've already made a commitment to these people. Yeah, but I can make more money doing it that way. So who cares about my commitment that I've made? Who cares about the arrangement? Who cares about my promises? I can break them at any time. Sounds like a certain prayer that is recited once a year, doesn't it? That certain things don't need, any promises don't need to be honoured. Funny that, isn't it? Okay, let's move on to drive to ban racist dogs from the Welsh countryside to make the outdoors more inclusive. And according to the article, some people in some races don't like dogs. Hence this demonise the doggies drive from the Labour-run Welsh administration. Next, female recluse told police she abused monkeys because she hated pregnant women and children. British ringleader of Monkey Torture Network tried to blame offending on made-up disorder Happy Valley Syndrome. Next, fury as Italian hotel cancels Israeli couple's booking and tells them they are responsible for genocide. Next, Pentagon says UFO nearly crashed into commercial airliner above New York as bombshell report is released. Could this be a precursor to Project Bluebeam? Or am I being overly conspiratorial here? Ooh, maybe not. Get this. Next, bombshell report about Pentagon's new secret UAP program, Immaculate Constellation, reveals new evidence of UFOs and alien life. Next, women's rights campaigner won't be charged for saying trans GP enjoys intimately examining women without their consent. But police refused to tell her that decision was made months ago. So, in my opinion, when the police didn't get the opportunity to charge her as they wished, they spitefully decided to let her stew a while. Next, Bank of England chief Andrew Bailey calls for EU ties to be rebuilt to stop long-term UK decline, as he warns of global trade risks following Trump election win. Ooh, sounds like the bankers want to get us back into the EU, doesn't it? And as Lord Victor Rothschild was instrumental in getting us in, that headline was of absolutely no surprise to me. Next, Trump picks Caroline Leavitt to be the face of the White House as press secretary. Oh, that's a surprise. When many different sources on beforeitsnews.com were telling us Alex Jones had already got the job. And finally, the Church of England is irrelevant to our lives, say Britons, as half say it should be disestablished so it is not linked to the state. And I, for one, can't disagree with that in its current form. But again, in the book of Deuteronomy, you're told that if you follow the laws of God, you get the blessings, and if you go against them, you get the cursings. Well, you look at what the Church of England stands for today and compare that to the laws of God, and you will see where they are simply reaping what they have sown. So you have to also look at who goes along with this, and this is why the synagogue of Satan is such a broad group, because people who go along with all this stuff to get along are perilously on the precipice of being a part of that group, if not being in it, through their inaction and antipathy towards it. So it's sad. I lived in a place where there was a 900-year-old church built in 12-something, or 11-something, I think, originally. And then it was built upon since then, or what have you. But it was this amazing building just to touch the wall and think, you know, I mean, if you, most of the people listening here are in the United States. And you wouldn't have structures, certainly built by white people, that go back that far. So it is sad that we are where we are with this history. But it's not just the church. The people have allowed themselves to be taken away from it, and they've allowed all these other things to supersede. It takes us back to that. I'm not a Muslim, I'm a Christian. But there was that headline I just read you about, oh, wasn't Iran great when they were all having sex and all that in the 70s before this horrible Islam came in? Well, that's another form of religion that is not one I follow, but it does actually have some sort of moral basis to it that some may or may not agree with. But there you go. Okay, so we're over time, I can see, so we're no longer live on Radio Soapbox, but I'm going to finish off because this is a short topic section today. It's during nullification, and I have this lined up for ever since the people started being fast-tracked through the courts after protesting these different protests about the three little girls, the little toddlers being killed in the UK, and they're all getting these 2-3 year sentences just for, you know, seemingly looking at the police the wrong way. In some cases, it seemed completely over the top, which made me think about what would happen if a jury just said, well, even though you can prove they've done X, Y, and Z, we're going to say not guilty. And there's actually a term for it called jury nullification, which I hadn't heard of before. This is earlier in the week, Mark R. Elsis of earthnewspaper.com. I mentioned this on yesterday's show, but I'm going to mention it again today because it pertains to this topic. He put out a Rumble video about half an hour on jury nullification, because this is something I can see happening all over the world. But let me just explain to you what Wikipedia says about it. And this seems to be a fairly good explanation, but you be the judge. I'm quoting from Wikipedia page on jury nullification. It's also known in the United Kingdom as jury equity or a perverse verdict. And it's when the jury in a criminal trial gives a verdict of not guilty, even though they think a defendant has broken the law. The jury's reasons may include the belief that the law itself is unjust, that the prosecutor has misapplied the law in the defendant's case, that the punishment for breaking the law is too harsh, or general frustrations with the criminal justice system. Some juries have also refused to convict due to their own prejudices in favour of the defendant. Such verdicts are possible because, get this, a jury has an absolute right to return any verdict it chooses. And the reason I've been thinking about this is there was so much backlash in the public about these people, you know, even some of them over, you know, posting things on Facebook, like they've been in trouble with the police before, made a comment on Facebook that, you know, a bit like, I'm going to kill him, which you're never going to do. It's just a spur of the moment thing that you lose your temper, you say something like that. But it's taken as literal, a bit like what we saw years ago. I remember some guy was getting onto an airplane and they were looking at his bag and he said, oh, careful, there's a bomb in there. And it was like, oh, this guy can't get on the plane. Oh, he's terrible. Well, it was obviously a joke, all right? It's a joke. But this was all part of where they're going to now. That's a way of controlling speech. Well, you're obviously, you know, taking the piss there, weren't you? You know what I mean? And we can see for ourselves because we've gone through your bag. But no, we can't have that, no. So it's a world without humour, and we know that the enemies of God, and especially the enemies of God's covenant people, who are the real chosen people, they want to take everything from you. And that includes your sense of humour. They want you to have absolutely nothing, folks. They don't just want to kill you. As Peter Hammond said in his experiences with communists when he'd been jailed over the years, we don't want to kill you, then you go to Jesus Christ. We don't want that. We want to torture you. We want to torture you so much that you become one of us. And then you never go to Jesus Christ, you see. And so all these people out there thinking, oh, bloody, if God existed, he wouldn't allow a world like this to go on. You know, all this sort of stuff. Well, unfortunately, we're all part of that problem that's led us to where we are today because we haven't spoken out enough to stop it. So maybe we will get to a situation where people start saying at these trials, well, you know, you say that the law says that this person can go to prison for 3 or 4 years because they made a comment on Facebook. Well, we just see that as a comment and we don't think that they should even be here. And if we start seeing stuff like that, we could really turn this thing around. But it's going to require some independent thinking of people who end up in that situation. Let's hope and pray that we have some people standing up for sanity in this increasingly insane world. Okay, now it's time for the news roundup of the week. Here we go, folks. First up, BBC. Mattel deeply regrets porn site misprint on Wicked Dolls. And based upon the detail that goes into launching new products, I would be very surprised if this misprint was an accident. Next, Daily Mail. Wardrobes, bleach and bathtubs. The objects in your home that are most likely to kill you. A study shows astonishing rise in deaths from unfortunate freak events. And here's the start of the article. The number of Brits dying from freak accidents like unknowingly drinking bleach or being crushed by a wardrobe has soared to record highs of more than 20,000 per year, new data shows. So-called accidental deaths are 42% higher than they were two decades ago, with these types of fatalities now the leading cause of preventable deaths in the under 40s. The Royal Association for the Prevention of Accidents, ROSPA, the organisation that collected the data, has warned that the UK is facing an accident crisis. Falls remained the nation's top accidental killer, accounting for almost half of all deaths, followed by the accidental ingestion of medications, cleaning products or cosmetics, which accounted for 1 in 4. Next, Daily Mail. Scientists reveal which creature will rule Earth should all humans die. And apparently it's octopuses, folks. And this is because they, and I quote, possess the physical and metal attributes necessary to evolve into the next civilization-building species, which is in contradiction to what Bill Hicks predicted would survive an apocalypse, and that was Keith Richards and bugs. Next, Netflix slammed over Mike Tyson Jake Paul fight streaming quality issues, and apparently viewers on both sides of the Atlantic experienced, and I quote, poor image quality, prolonged buffering, and spotty audio. So, as I've always said, folks, stock up on cheap second-hand CDs, DVDs, and Blu-rays so you have hard copies of your favourite media and don't have to rely on unstable streaming services that, even when they are broadcasting correctly, do not do so at the same resolution as the aforementioned CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays, hard copy media. And again, I am tremendously conspiratorial. As someone who is a targeted individual, that's my natural reaction to what has happened to me. But what do you think is going to happen when there's no DVDs, CDs, stuff like that? And, oh, well, everyone who wants to listen to music has to log on here. Or they want to watch video. They want to, oh, well, they haven't got any choice in there, have they? So maybe we can just disrupt it just to annoy them. You know, like we've taken their humour away, let's take that away. And, you know, it could... We've got smart meters where they can control electricity and stuff like that. But they'll do these other things, even when they're not necessarily targeting an individual. They'll just do it to be bloody-minded. Because I honestly believe as well, these people that Jesus Christ called the synagogue of Satan, they are obviously people that are not only evil, but they place evil above anything else. So they will place the committing of evil above anything else. So if they can disrupt somebody, you know, someone's not done them any harm and they can disrupt their day in one way or another, that's something that they're not going to miss the opportunity to do. And finally, Daily Mail. Marilyn Monroe has been haunting a famous Hollywood hotel since she died tragically at the age of 36. On that bombshell, you have been listening to The Limeys, episode 194. You can't argue with someone who's made up their mind. The Limeys will be back with you next Sunday. I'll be back with Peter on Tuesday. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week, and bye for now.